time for Sports Lit 101. We have been enjoying some wonderful poetry over the course of the last few weeks. And last week, Bruce shared some incredibly moving works from the new collection, Headhunting and Other Sports Poems. We decided to go to the source authority this week. The author of this wonderful collection, Phil Razor, joins us.
Anyway, Rich was saying how much we've enjoyed the few poems that I read, and then we were going to go to the source. And first, I want to say, you were just about to get this out when I last saw you, so that's why I sort of missed it. Since you've got this collection together, have you still been working on the same kind of poems?
Well, one of the things I've done is over a period of time, move from subject to subject. I spent probably a year and a half, 2 years on headhunting. When I finished with that book, I wrote individual sports poems, but I moved into a whole new set of subjects. For a while, I was working on a book of poetry about revolution, which sent me into a lot of research, a lot of history, brought me up to today, tried to explore that sensibility of revolution. Then after that, I moved into a subject I had not seen any poetry about, and that was being a landlord. I'd never seen a book of poems about the state of mind of trying to be serviceable to tenants. So I thought, well, let me explore that. Let me think about that. So, Bruce, what I have done is gone to different subjects after headhunting, though I'm still writing individual poems about that.
Well, one of the things that struck me about headhunting, I mean, obviously, as a former, you played basketball in college with Will Chamberlain, you played at LSU, you played in a very famous high school basketball game in Indiana. But one of the things that struck me is that you can take all these different sports, and the poem is about sports, but it's always about something else, which we talked about with Dale Ritterbusch a couple of weeks ago. When you get the trigger, is it usually the other thing, or is it the sports trigger that leads you to the other thing?
You know, I think always in my mind is watching a game or watching a golf match or watching a football game. I am a watcher. I think we all are. That's why we're fans. We watch the game. But one of the things the poet wants to do is to say, okay, what's in the mind of all of us? What's in the mind of the fan as he or she is watching the game? What's in the mind of the player as he's playing football? He's a mind, and somebody will say to me, well, it's, you know, concentrated on the guy right opposite of him. Do you think that athletes' minds don't go anywhere except what they have right in front of them? My thought is that, and my experience is, that one of the most interesting things is about the world of athletes as they are playing and thinking, and the world of fans as they are watching and remembering. So I try to bring all that together in the poetry that I do.
Is there we'd love to have you read. Is there something that you would really like to read from here? And I think what we're also going to do, Phil, is we're going to maybe take the video away, because it's they're having a little bit of trouble with things breaking up. Carrie's working on it. But of one of the a poem that I didn't read, one that really gets at the heart of what you were thinking about what you just said you think about as you're writing.
Yeah, let me give you one here that all of us probably can identify with. When we were young, little league, let's say, I'll take a baseball poem. We were young, we were little league, our uniforms were too large for us. Nobody wanted to be a catcher on the team. We just wanted to be out on the field. So if we can imagine maybe a little kid out in center field as he is being involved in a little league game. And this one is called First Principles. We made up words like flund and squitter. That ball had hair on it. Funk face on the field. But not in the kitchen where supper was yelled through windows. We heard from fathers the names of Ruth, Musial, Williams, Feller, and shared a reverence for heroes, but only if they showed up in the last inning when girls we feared watched from the stands. That's why we learned to slide with spikes up, hot dog around third after a homer, chase down a Texas leaguer, and spit. Who yelled behind backstops that our backside should be strapped to a rock in a barrel of tar. Why then, after the game, did they waddle up, tousle our hair, and pat those same butts? We love the smell of these scuffed balls, dry grass, and each other. You're out, slowed our hearts. But games over struck us down. Let us be clear. In class, we hated poetry because teachers knew verse about flowers and urns, but not what it was like to stand in a wool uniform and pray for just once, shouting, attaboy, and pitch it to him, until a ball cracked off a bat and rose so high, only luck or grace could find it in the unforgiving sunlight over beautiful center field.
I love it. I think that one of the greatest things about baseball poetry is that baseball, you know, we all know the old George Carlin routine, and it's pastoral baseball, right? There's something about all the moments where nothing seems to be happening, but something is always happening, that makes it so good for poetry and for fiction. You know, and I think that another sport like that, I've been working on a book of hockey poems. I find that very difficult. Basketball and baseball seem headed as better for poetry. Have you got a basketball poem for us?
I do. There's a the game you mentioned, that game that was the inspiration for Hoosiers. Of course, since I was on the losing team in that game, that's haunted me for all these years. So I've gone back to that game many times. But one of the things that I think about is when I go back to Indiana, I will see old men sitting in chairs as I go downtown. I'll stop by and they'll reminisce, and they have their stories about where they were when that game took place. And so eventually that came as a poem for me, and I'll read that one here. This is called The Heart of the Matter, and the epigram is from the announcer for the Hoosiers game. They're already calling this the game of the century. You listen to old men in Indiana who sit on chairs, spit in glass jars, and scratch openly at an itch below the belt, who remember the miraculous spot where they were when Little Myland rocked the Goliaths, Muncie Bearcats, in the 1954 state tourney, Hickory and South Bend in the Technicolor version. You listen to them recalling the days when a team, no matter the size of the school, could win it all, and you'd think the game retreated from the map the day class basketball rode into the state like a Southern Raider set on dissolving the Union. Take Muck Rampart. Muck has no grandson, no ex-cheerleader wife. What does it matter to a one-legged World War II vet from Daleville whether or not the kids in his town, no bigger than a pickle barrel, could roll over those sour-faced cucumbers from New Albany and get to the sweet sauce in Indianapolis? Because it's hopeless, Muck says. Hopeless, but still possible. And he polishes his stump like a dug-up diamond, reminding us that on one sun-torturing, maggot-ridden afternoon, he gutted a machine gun nest while the rest of the world was roasting bait fish to gulls or eating cold peas in a muggy kitchen. It's hard to disagree with a wise old coot hooting out that every kid should have a chance to do the impossible. You could end up like Mylan, world famous, a movie made about you, or a medal-winning hero, damaged but not dead, certain he's made America better because of his loss. But you can make the case, too, that only once in 50 years did a small school win the state title, or that the mucks of war left Okinawa with 100,000 casualties. Go ahead, spit in your jar and add that division into classes, it's as American as grandma's pie. Or you can drive across town to a tarmac court, be there near dusk, lean against chain link. You'll hear the swish of nets, swish, laughter, and soon you'll drift back to that gravel patch a block from home. You and your brother and some guy you don't even know under schoolyard lights where your fathers used to play when movies were grainy. Here, you are together, legs like willows, eyes in the back of your head, and time like found gold that you spin off a pick into one indisputable fact. All that matters is the flick of the wrist from 20 feet out when everything is on the line but your life.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons I love this collection. We're all here in the studio nodding. I'd love to have you read one more. If you've got a short one that it isn't too long, yeah, I'd love to have you read another one because this has really been enjoyable.
Yeah, one of the things too. Okay, I didn't want to write only about what the guys were doing because the girls have just risen for all of us, whether male or female. We love to watch it. So this one is called Rising Star. She stood in the alley and kicked the ball against the garage door again and again. Explosions even neighbors approved. On game day, carloads of fans watched her lope across the field like a young dog off its leash. They wished she was theirs. Her header at goal launched her body into a maze of defenders, arms raised, who dove to block her, but she was gone. Leaping and wagging in celebration. The echoes in the alley were muted, but not her father's voice in the kitchen. It rose like a fist blindsiding a wall near her mother's face, cheap shot for one who hunted deer with a 16 gauge. At the window, her mother leaned into glass, hovered like a small animal whose feint and dodge in an open field is all the hope it has. What could she do, this daughter, who learned rules, out of bound lines, respect for outrageous calls by referees? She had lost close games and sobbed in teammates' arms. She had known days of debris and counsel from friends. The next time, we'll win the next time. Advice even she knew was useless now. Let others decide if what she did was wise or merely the gasp of a desperate child. But she headed the ball, cupped her hands, and shouted, "Mama, come to the game. You can cheer. You can cheer, Mama.
I love it. And as the faculty representative from University of Maine women's hockey team and all of us who love women's sports, thank you for that poem, because that's one thing we need more of. Ron Smith and I were talking about that not long ago, that we need more sports poems about women's sports.
You bet.
Was great. Well, Phil, it's been a great pleasure. I hope that I will see you again at SLA one of these days, either in New Brunswick or in Maine. And let's keep in touch. And when anything new is coming out, let us know.
Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it, Bruce.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you, Phil.
Bye-bye.
That's great. Phil Razor, the collection is called Headhunting and Other Sports Poems.